Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the latest superstorm and speak with Michael Mann, the Nobel Prize-winning founder and contributor to the award-winning science website realclimate.org. We will discuss this latest extreme weather event in the context of the global warming challenge that President Obama will likely address in Tuesday's State of the Union, while Senator Marco Rubio, who will offer the Republican rebuttal, may explain why he does not believe that global warming is real. Then we'll look into how many challenges face the president and whether he can address them all in his State of the Union and hope to achieve some legislative victory in his second term, with a hostile and implacable House determined to impose austerity that will tank the economy and doom any hopes of recovery. Democratic strategist Ed Kilgore, the principal writer of the Washington Monthly's Political Animal blog, joins us to discuss whether the president has spread himself too thin and what advice the Democrats will take from Bill Clinton's recent pep talk. Then finally, we will speak with author and award-winning investigative journalist Joe Dominic, who is a leading authority on the Los Angeles Police Department. He has written To Protect and Serve, the LAPD Century of War in the City of Dreams, and is writing Road to Reckoning, the Collapse and Reformation of the LAPD. With the LAPD now under siege from a former member of its ranks who is on a vengeful murder spree vowing to kill senior LAPD officers and their families, we will discuss efforts by the fugitive to frame his grudge and blame his dismissal on racial injustice. And joining us now is Michael Mann, the director of the Earth System Science Center at Penn State University. He's a co-founder and contributor to the award-winning science website realclimate.org. And in 2007, he shared the Nobel Peace Prize with others on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. His books include Dire Predictions, Understanding Global Warming, and The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, Dispatches from the Front Lines. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Mann.
Thanks. It's great to be back with you.
And you've described this latest weather events in the northeast in New England, where in Connecticut, for example, they really got hammered. And you described this as the weather on steroids.
That's right. I mean, obviously, you know, nor'easters like this latest storm, Nemo, are going to happen naturally. We're always going to have weather, and we're going to have extreme weather. But that weather is taking place within a new context, within a globe that is warmer, with oceans that are warmer and put more moisture into the atmosphere, and that's part of the energy that helps intensify storms of this sort. So when you look at what's happening collectively with more extreme nor'easter-type storms, more intense hurricanes, more intense flooding events, that can be attributed collectively to the effect that we are having through human-caused climate change on our weather, an effect that's leading to more extreme weather events like Nemo.
Well, apparently, specifically in the case of Nemo, my understanding is that in a curious way, it's been too cold to snow heavily. But when you bring in the warmer air from the Gulf of Mexico, you set up this big storm.
That's right. You know, we have the storm that occurred more than a decade ago, sometimes referred to as the perfect storm. This storm, in a sense, was perhaps an even more perfect storm, in that it occurred with near record ocean surface temperatures off the east coast of New England. So the North Atlantic is quite warm right now, especially in the region neighboring New England. And that storm, it's a classic nor'easter. It formed, it was a low-pressure system that formed off the coast. And the winds were picking up all of that moisture from that very warm ocean surface and bringing them around the other side of storm inland to where it was quite cold. And so we had a very warm source of moisture, a large amount of moisture that was then circulated by the storm into New England, where it fell as record snowfall. And there is a relationship. There's a very fundamental physical relationship between how warm the ocean surface is and how much moisture, it can evaporate into the atmosphere, moisture that's available for forming snowfalls. So what happened there was tied to the unusually warm ocean conditions, and we know that there's a human component in that warming of the ocean.
Well, apparently, though, the ocean itself has risen. In Boston, for example, it's risen a foot in the last 90 years.
Absolutely, and that compounds the problem. That was a factor in the record flooding that we saw with Hurricane Sandy in New York City this fall, and it was a factor in the coastal surge that we saw associated with this storm, where there was quite a bit of flooding along parts of eastern Massachusetts, the parts of the coastline of eastern Massachusetts. Every single one of those storms now sits on an ocean that's more than a foot higher than it was a century ago because of global warming. And that means that every single one of these coastal flooding events, it too has a component which is related to human-caused climate change. So even if one disputed all of the other factors that I talked about that helped create a context where a storm like this, where conditions were more favorable for a storm like this, just the rising sea levels from human-caused global warming have already worsened the impacts of storms like Nemo and like Sandy.
Again, I'm speaking with Michael Mann, who's the director of the Earth System Science Center at Penn State University. He's a co-founder and contributor to the award-winning science website, realclimate.org. And in 2007, he shared the Nobel Peace Prize with others on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. His books include Dire Predictions, Understanding Global Warming, and The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, Dispatches from the Front Lines. And the hockey stick analogy is, I take it, Michael, is that the climate throughout the centuries has been, you know, the long part of the hockey stick. It's just been level, and then suddenly it's just, all of a sudden, it's abruptly turned upwards and curved like the end of a hockey stick. Is that describing it?
Yeah. So that's the term that was applied to this reconstruction that of past temperatures that my co-authors and I published more than a decade ago. It shows a long-term cooling trend prior to industrialization, and then a very rapid warming over the past century and a half that's unprecedented, as far back as we were able to take our estimates, 1,000 years back in time. And so this graph became an icon in the climate change debate, and because of that, it became an object of attack for those looking to discredit the science of climate change. And I found myself in the crosshairs of those attacks. And so my book, The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, describes my experiences as a scientist, as a scientist who reluctantly and accidentally became a public figure because of the way that this graph that we had produced figured into the larger debate over climate change. But, you know, that blade of the hockey stick that you refer to, in fact, is a good analogy for what's happening with a number of aspects of our climate. It's not just that global temperatures are increasing in an anomalous way. We've seen a record rate of decline in the amount of sea ice in the Arctic, and that has profound implications for our climate. We actually have seen a very large increase in the intensity of winter precipitation events in New England. In fact, NOAA put out a graph earlier this week that shows that, in fact, Nemo, this record 24-hour snowfall in many regions of New England from Nemo, is actually part of a longer-term trend where we've seen far more intense winter snowfall events of this sort, and it is part of the larger changes that are taking place in our climate, many of which are quite detrimental because of the greenhouse gases that we are putting into the atmosphere from fossil fuel burning and other activities.
So, Michael Mann, do you expect the president to talk about climate change on Tuesday in the State of the Union?
I certainly hope he does. I think that, he pleased many of my colleagues and me by making climate change a featured topic in his inauguration speech some weeks ago. He has given a number of indications in in the lead up to his second term, that he does plan to make climate change a much higher priority in his second term than he did in his first term. Now, as they often say, the devil is in the details, and I think many of us who feel quite strongly that this is an issue that we can't wait to address, that there's an urgency now to averting potentially catastrophic climate change that demands that we act now. And we will be very interested to see what sorts of specific concrete actions he's proposing to take in his second term. And hopefully he'll lay that out in a little bit more detail in his State of the Union speech. Ironically, and it's part of what all too unfortunate pattern that's emerged, the partisan divide that's emerged in the climate change debate. My understanding is that Marco Rubio of Florida will be giving the response to the State of the Union address, and he has recently expressed what you might describe as contrarianism or even denial of the threat of climate change, and there's the potential that he may, in fact, present the opposite view in the response. And that would be very unfortunate, because we need to have a good faith debate about what policies to enact to deal with this threat. But we can no longer continue to have this unworthy debate about whether the problem even exists. And unfortunately, there are many in our politics who want to just bury their heads in the sands and pretend the problem doesn't even exist.
Well, Marco Rubio just recently said it doesn't exist, or at least it's not man-made.
Right.
So he is the sort of pin-up boy of denial and the problem that entails, because obviously, as you point out, Michael Mann, you can't deal with the problem when you deny the fact that a problem exists, although the evidence is manifest. Now,
I was just going to add that I actually tweeted earlier today a link to an article that talks about Marco Rubio's stance on climate change. So for people who want to check that out, my Twitter handle is Michael E. Mann.
Well, but the president himself, it seems to me that he ought to come up with a different approach. I mean, in his first State of the Union, in his past addresses, he talked about green jobs. That's gone nowhere, and that never caught on. I mean, it seems to me that following Sandy and following Nimoy, this is the time is right now for him to make a stand about the overwhelming evidence that nature is providing us now. And
yeah,
also
absolutely.
point out that this is going to get worse. I mean, this is just the beginning of a cycle, is it? I mean, this is the new normal, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's the new normal, and there will be no analogy for what we're headed towards. In other words, we're seeing in many regions heat during the spring that we used to see during the summer over a large part of the country. And if we continue on the trajectory we're on, we are going to see summer heat in the future over many parts of the U.S. and associated drought impacts that are unlike anything we've ever seen. It's interesting that the point that you just made was one that was driven home in an editorial by the Washington Post just today, where they, in fact, have said that it isn't enough for the president to just frame this issue in generic terms having to do with green jobs and energy security, because that neglects the fact that the real reason to shift away from our reliance on fossil fuels is the damage that those carbon emissions are having on the planet through climate change. And if you neglect that impact, then there just isn't the proper incentive structure in place to incentivize the shift away from fossil fuels towards other sources of energy that aren't degrading the planet in the same way.
So, Marco Mann, again, the director of the Earth System Science Center at Penn State University, and in 2007 he shared the Nobel Peace Prize with others on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and his latest book is The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, Dispatches from the Front Lines. So what would you like the president to say? What do you think would be the best way that he can get the American people engaged in this issue? It's so such a profound threat to human civilization and the planet itself. It requires something like a Manhattan Project or a man on the moon speech that Jack Kennedy made.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure that he's going to rise to that occasion. But if Rubio is going to deny the existence of climate change in the rebuttal, it seems to me incumbent upon the president to really take these people on, because they are so irresponsible, and it's so clear that, you know, a lot of it's to do with our press that has equal and opposite arguments, sure, no matter how bogus they are. So we have this ludicrous situation where creationism is equated with evolution.
Sure. It's almost as if, you know, every time, the analogy would be that every time NASA makes a new discovery in space exploration, they get a member of the Flat Earth Society to present the opposite view. There's, you know, this phenomenon you refer to that I like to call the false objectivity of balance. Simply providing balance is not objective. Accuracy is objective. And you don't put, you know, somebody who is, you know, a mouthpiece for special interests spouting anti-scientific propaganda up on a pedestal, up on the stage with, you know, credible scientists. The National Academy of Sciences is on record. All of the major science societies in the U.S. that involve any area of science relevant to climate change, all of these organizations are on record as affirming that climate change is real, that we are responsible for it, and that there are real risks that are in store if we don't do something about it. So I think Obama does have to make a bold statement about the issue. He said he wants to have a national conversation about the threat posed by climate change. And a good way to begin that conversation would be to make a bold affirmative statement in his State of the Union address about the importance of addressing this problem head on. Now, he may not have the votes right now in Congress to pass legislation in the next 2 years, but that shouldn't stop him from making the case. And that shouldn't stop him from putting in place a strategy and a support structure for moving forward when we do have more favorable circumstances as far as our politics are concerned. Maybe 2 years from now, we'll be in a different position with regard to the makeup of Congress, and we might be able to get meaningful legislation passed. So in the meantime, it makes sense to do the work necessary so that we can move forward as soon as there is an opportunity on passing meaningful legislation to deal with the emission of carbon into the atmosphere, that is, warming the planet, changing our climate, and already having hugely detrimental impacts on our economy and society more generally.
Well, it seems to me, Michael Mann, that we could follow the example of Australia, which is even more impacted by climate change than the United States is. The whole center of the country has had this big pall of baking hot air over the middle, and every time it moved in one direction, it would create bushfires. And then they've had record floods along the Pacific North Coast, and they are an economy very heavily dependent upon the export of coal and uranium, yep, and iron ore, and mining lobbies huge, but nevertheless, they are able to pass a carbon tax. We have a problem here with the coal lobby, because coal is the worst culprit of all in global warming. Right. So what do you think about that?
Well, you know, Australia is an interesting situation because it was literally going up in flames, during their summer, you know, a month ago. Unprecedented heat and drought and wildfire. And the only thing that was thicker than the smoke from those wildfires was the irony that Rupert Murdoch was using his media empire in Australia as all of this was transpiring to continue to deny the science of climate change. And as long as we have this sort of poisoning of the well, this attempt to derail any meaningful discourse about climate change by vested interests like Rupert Murdoch and News Corp and in the U.S., the Koch brothers as well, it is difficult to move forward on this problem when hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent by vested interests to poison the public conversation. We need to get past that. As you note, in Australia, even in that unfavorable environment where, you know, Rupert Murdoch controls much of the media, They have been able to make progress, and we ought to be able to do so here as well. Yes, there are going to be well-funded campaigns to discredit any effort that the president makes to deal with climate change. He's got to recognize that, and he's got to fight back and use the bully pulpit, use the resources that he brings as president of the United States to help move us forward on this issue.
Well, Michael Mann, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Michael Mann, who's the director of the Earth System Science Center at Penn State University. He's a co-founder and contributor to the award-winning science website realclimate.org. And in 2007, he shared the Nobel Peace Prize with others on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. His books include Dire Predictions, Understanding Global Warming, and The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, Dispatches from the Front Lines. And we're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back discussing whether the president has spread himself too thin and what advice the Democrats will take from Bill Clinton's recent pep talk.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of me.